sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you New World A-Coming, a series of vivid programs dramatizing the inner meanings of Negro life by Roy Ottley. Today's broadcast, in honor of Citywide Harlem Week, stars Canada Lee as narrator. Dr. Algernon Black, guest speaker, will be heard at the close of the program.
You know, folks, there's a whole lot of people who want to do something to create a better feeling among all people, especially between Negroes and whites. But many of them just don't know where to start. I guess the reason they fumble about is that they don't know too much about Negroes as human beings. Yes, they know about such things as high rents, poor health, and bad housing conditions and chronic unemployment. Things that are characteristic of living in slums. Things that are true of a large section of the white community. But what is often lost in the maze of statistics is what happens to human beings. Today I want to tell you about those human beings. People like you and me. I want to tell you how living in a black ghetto brings forth tensions and hostilities. And even riots which endanger the democratic way of life. Let's first stop in a butcher shop in Harlem where a Negro housewife is waiting for service.
Mister, will you please wait on me, Mister?
You'll have to wait your turn, lady. I can't wait on two people at once.
I know, but I've been waiting a half an hour already. And every time it's been my turn, you've skipped me.
Everybody comes in here before closing time and expects to be waited on right away.
Well, you know we've been working all day.
Say, lady, if you don't like the service here, you can go somewhere else. You don't have to pay.
How would you feel if a merchant spoke to you in that manner? You'd be pretty burned up, wouldn't you? Yes, of course you would. You'd probably never go in that shop again. But the Harlem housewife has no other place to go. For Negroes are locked in a ghetto with no freedom of movement outside the 2-square-mile radius known as Harlem. Most of the merchants in Harlem are white. One merchant is pretty much like another. Brusque, indifferent, hostile. In this setting, merchants know that they are not compelled to show the ordinary courtesies to Negro shoppers. And this is one condition that leads to tension. And now, I'd like you to come with me to any residential street in Harlem. Usually you'll find a renting sign on some of the houses that say, for select colored tenants only. Well, that house is usually a pretty old house. But I will say this, it's kind of fixed up inside. And that's only because the city housing authorities forced the landlords to make necessary repairs. Of course, the rent that the tenants pay would make you think it ought to be a first-class house. Well, I have friends living in such a house. They're very nice people. The man works for the government and earns a fairly decent salary. The wife is a social worker. They've been living there with their 2 kids for about 4 years. I was talking with the wife recently, and she told me a revealing incident with her agent one day when he came to collect rents and she was sick.
Yes.
How about this month's rent, Mrs. Brown?
Oh, come in, won't you? I'd like you to come into the front room and take a look at the ceiling.
Now, you're not going to show me that fallen plaster again, are you?
That ceiling's been leaking for 4 months.
4 months?
I've spoken to you at least a dozen times about it. Look at my rug and sofa. Every time it rains, it comes down in buckets. and ruined my furniture.
Well, why don't you use your head a little? Move the furniture.
Move the furniture? Where? Room's too small. Don't you think the proper thing to do would be to repair the roof?
Now, listen, I'm a busy man. How about the rent?
I think you'd have some regard for your own property, even if you don't respect our comfort and rights in the matter.
Now, never mind that, lady. I came here for the rent, not for arguments.
Well, I think it's a shame charging $55 a month for this cramped-up place on an alley. So many things needing repair. It's unhealthy to live here.
Now listen, I'm not asking you to stay in this apartment. You know you can always move.
You see what I mean? Do you blame a Harlem housewife for getting angry? Believe me, when a Negro tenant complains of exorbitant rent, much-needed repairs, inadequate service, and indeed the unfairness of it all, and sees no way to improve her condition, that situation becomes pretty inflammatory. For actually, that woman can't move. Oh, sure, sure, she can move next door, but never out of the ghetto. The landlords know this and take advantage of it. Did you know that on nearly every street in Harlem, there's at least one pawn shop? They're just about as numerous as butcher stores. And that's because the pawn shops play a very significant role in the life of Harlem. You know, of course, that banks and personal finance corporations don't loan money on a mere suit of clothes. Security must be in the form of real property or a stable job. The great bulk of Negroes have neither. So they must turn to the pawn shops when they need money in an emergency. And that's Harlem. Well, while walking along 8th Avenue just the other day, I heard two men talking loudly.
Well, what do you know about that?
Now, take it easy, man. Take it easy. I sure thought you was going to blow your top, Joe.
Oh, man, these pawn shops drag everybody. I feel like breaking that one up.
I approached one of them, recognized me, and said,
"Hey, Mr. Lee.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Lee.
Yeah?
Did you see what happened to Joe in that pawn shop?"
"No, what happened?"
"Well, Joe here, now he went home one night last week, and his wife says to him, 'Joe, there's only 15 cents in the house, and the kids ain't had no supper.' Now, you know, Joe, he don't get paid till Saturday night, so he takes his Sunday suit and slips over to the pawn shop and borrows $5 on it.
Yeah.
Today, he went back to get his suit. And when that pawn shop man told him how much it cost, well, Joe, that you went crazy. Oh, go ahead. You tell him. Joe, tell him."
"Well, here's what happened, Mr. Lee. I fell in there to get my suit. I figured the rate to be about $1.50, and I figured another 50 cents for that special stuff they put on."
"Oh, you mean the storage charges?"
"Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
Well, I laid down my pawn ticket and $7. Remember, now I only got $5. So I knew $7 won't cover the whole deal. Guess what that fool told me?
5, 5, 56, 56, 57. Plus another $1.50, pal. $8.50 altogether.
$8.50? For what?
Don't you read your ticket, mister?
Oh, I read my ticket. But $8.50? You're charging me more than you're supposed to.
Now, look, fella. Don't get yourself in an uproar. You got $5 loan, right?
Yeah.
The interest is $1.50, right?
Uh-huh.
And there's another $1 for care and storage. Plus $1 for moth-proofing, which makes a total of $8.50.
Moth-proofing? Why, man, you're mad.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna let you highway me out of my money.
Look, buddy, we didn't ask you to bring your clothes here. Do you want the suit or don't you? I ain't got no time to argue with you. I'm busy. Now, who's next?
Oh, man, give me my suit. But it don't make no sense. No, it don't make no sense.
No, Joe, it doesn't make sense. You see, folks, the pawnbroker is aware that Joe can't borrow money anywhere else, except in another pawn shop. So he takes advantage of Joe and drives a hard and unfair bargain. Now, let's contrast Joe's problems with those of Negroes who earn steady incomes and who can afford some of the better things of life.
Obviously, their problems are on a different level, but no less acute to them. A few days ago, I stopped in a tavern on 7th Avenue for a cool glass of beer. As I entered, the bartender spoke.
Hello, Mr. Lee. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Bob. And you?
Oh, pretty good. Business has been good, but no one seems to be enjoying themselves.
Hey, Joe, what about a beer, huh, Bob?
Got you covered, Mr. Lee.
Okay. While I was drinking my beer, I happened to notice two couples seated in an adjoining booth. The girls were smartly dressed and good-looking. The two young men were in sack suits. They idled with their drinks while they talked.
Yeah. Why don't we go somewhere else?
Well, where?
Let's go to a Broadway show or a club or something.
Sweetheart, must we go into that again? I'd love to take you downtown. Just to show you off, if for no other reason.
And why don't you?
But you know the situations we can get into in Broadway restaurants and nightclubs.
Yes, I know.
The unpleasant way in which white people glare at you makes you very unhappy and me boiling mad.
Oh, dear. You think it's always going to be that way? What do you think, Tom?
Well, I get awfully tired of going to the same places all the time. I like a change. But I guess I think pretty much like my Ralph. When you go someplace to eat and have a good time, you don't want to wind up fighting.
Thelma and I were talking about that last night. There's so many things you can't do comfortably if you're colored. Makes you feel cramped and terribly shut in.
That conversation certainly depressed me. For you hear it so often, and I knew it was all too true. I had to go out on the street for fresh air and stretch my arms and legs a little. I wanted to feel free. As I started out of the door...
Hey, look out! Hey, look, that kid's been run over by a taxi. Hey, what's wrong with that driver? Hey, driver, why don't you look where you're going with that thing?
Why did you see me? Ran right in front of my tank.
Oh, is he badly hurt?
All right, folks. Now, let's don't get too excited. Let's not get too excited. Let's get the youngster to a hospital quick.
All right, I'll call a doctor.
Lay him on this seat here, Cabby. Okay, Cabby, now push off.
I couldn't help it. He ran right in front of me.
Now, how do you feel, Sonny?
Just not bad, Mr. Lee. Just my leg.
A man's scared to drive in the street these days. Ain't no room for these kids playing and running. A man's got to make a living, though.
Look, son, just what were you doing out there in the middle of the avenue?
We was playing stickball around the corner.
Yeah?
And Big Fred took the stick away from one of the little boys and knocked the ball way down the block. And I ran to get it.
Here we are, sir, the hospital.
All right, Sonny. Now, you just take it easy. We'll be inside in a minute.
Can I give you a hand, mister?
Just open that door, Cappy. Okay, Sonny, now hold on a little longer. We'll have you looked after in no time at all.
There now. Doesn't that feel better, Sonny?
Yes, ma'am.
No.
Yes, sir.
Pass me that cord.
Yes.
How's he now, Doctor?
Oh, he'll be all right in a few minutes, Mr. Lee.
If only they would do something about finding a place for these children to play. Never in my long experience in Harlem Hospital have I seen more accidents among these youngsters. And yet the newspapers refer to these youngsters as criminals and write grimly of crime waves in Harlem.
You know, folks, these things which we have seen often produces the fiercest kind of feelings and resentments in the community. At bottom, Harlem is frustrated. Now, back in 1935, these conditions, plus the difficulties of earning a decent living, brought on a riot involving almost 10,000 Negroes. Mayor LaGuardia named the biracial committee to investigate conditions in Harlem. And they gave as the riot's cause resentments against racial discrimination and poverty in the midst of plenty. But little was done to meet this situation, though by 1941, there was an alarming increase in juvenile delinquency, among others there. It broke into the press this way.
Harlem has crime wave.
White man murdered in Harlem.
Harlem has a new era of gangsterism.
Negro youths kill white boys.
Rise in violence against property.
Harlem in grip of crime wave.
Now, like I said before, a number of people, both Negro and white, were worried about these conditions. But they didn't take the newspaper reports at face value. Instead, they decided to go to the heart of the situation, to get down to fundamentals. In November 1941, about 250 leading citizens of the white and Negro communities gathered in the magistrate's court in Harlem. Magistrate Anna Cross, then presiding in one of the Harlem courts, addressed the group.
I've had a number of Negro boys before me, some of them mere children. I'm convinced that the number and kinds of cases coming up before me are symptomatic of a dangerous social situation.
Judge Cross, it seems to me the first task of this group should be to rouse the people of New York to the acute problems of Harlem in the matters of health, housing, education, recreation, crime and delinquency, and most of all, employment.
Quite right. But we should add also that the existing prejudices and injustices to the Negro produces tensions and hostility.
I think we're all in agreement, ladies and gentlemen. So let's have action.
Today we can smile. But at one point during that meeting, those who had met to solve a problem almost came to blows. But order was restored, and out of this meeting grew the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, the sponsor of this program. The 250 committee members, representing all walks of life, agreed that the purposes and objectives of the Citywide Citizens Committee were
to relieve the suffering and the tension, to fulfill the promise of equality of opportunity and true democracy for the Negro people, to try to make up for the neglects and mistakes of the past in the relations between Negro and white communities, and to contribute towards a morale based upon a real stake for the Negro people in a democracy and in the victory of the United Nations.
Folks, today we have in the studio with us Mr. Algernon D. Black, co-chairman of the Citywide Citizens Committee of Harlem. Dr. Black.
This is a war against bigotry and inequality and poverty. Wherever you are, you can help fight prejudice and better conditions through active citizenship. How? You can see to it that hospital staffs are open to qualified Negro physicians and nursing schools to Negro women. That housing, public and private, is rented to tenants regardless of race, creed or color. That employment in department stores, banks, insurance companies, and utilities is free of discrimination. You can help open the doors of child care institutions to all children according to need. Yes, and work for better schools, playgrounds with adequate supervision. All these are part of the struggle. And if you believe in these radio programs, which were made possible by Roy Offley and WMCA, and the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, then help us. Help us educate and mobilize the decent goodwill of your community and make the new world a common a reality for all men.
Thank you, Mr. Black. You've been listening to New World A Coming, the 14th in a series of programs devoted to the Negro's contribution to American life. Starring in today's broadcast was Canada Lee as narrator. Mr. Algernon D. Black was our guest speaker. Members of the cast included Betty Burghardt, Sanford Bicker, Howard Smith, Jimmy Wright, Freddie Carter, Ken Renard, Paquita Anderson, Grace Rogers, John Velasco. We invite you to be with us again next Sunday at 3:03. The radio dramatization of New World A Coming is written by Roy Ottley and based upon Mr. Ottley's book by the same name. The program is produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. John Velasco assisted. Music was conducted by Bill Wirtges. The theme song was composed by Duke Ellington. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to attend the broadcast of New World A Coming, tickets may be obtained by addressing your requests to station WMCA, 1657 Broadway, Zone 19, New York City. Your announcer, Bob Harris. This was a public service feature of station WMCA. This is America's leading independent station.